You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Allison Weir. Allison, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Allison, before we talk about this subject that caught my attention about Israel trying to exempt themselves from the sequestration cuts that every American has to suffer through, I just want, for the benefit of the listeners, to read a little bit of your background, if that's okay, right from your website, right from the CNI website.
Sure.
Allison Weir is a former journalist and the founder of If Americans Knew, a nonprofit organization that focuses on the Israel-Palestine conflict, specializing in statistical analysis. She writes and speaks widely about Israel-Palestine, with particular focus on media coverage, and her articles on the subject have been published in anthologies both in the United States and abroad, and in diverse online and print publications. Allison has given talks at numerous universities, including Harvard Law School, Stanford, UC Berkeley, Yale, the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, and the Naval Postgraduate Institute, 4 times at the Asia Media Summit in Kuala Lumpur and Beijing, and has 2 times given briefings on Capitol Hill. And I know from all the years of reading your work, Allison, it's terrific analysis and really required reading for anybody who wants to get a much fuller understanding of especially how the United States mainstream media skews the coverage of that most important area. So thanks so much for coming on today, and thanks for doing everything you do. You're a tireless advocate for truth, Allison. Now, this article that I saw online, and let me just bring it up here, lobby, that's the Israel lobby, to get Israel exempted from sequestration. Pretty amazing that as pretty much almost every American, not of course the 1%, but almost every American suffers in this tough environment, that Israel has the, and I'll use a, I guess that's a Hebrew word, chutzpah, to say that, well, yes, every American has to suffer, but we don't want to suffer. Is that fair to say that, or is there more to the story?
I think it's fair to say that. Basically, they feel that they're entitled. That's certainly the way the Israeli government views the world and views the U.S., and their lobby supports that viewpoint very much, that, you know, it doesn't matter to them that seniors are seeing Social Security cuts, that the military is being cut, that really all sectors pretty much of American society are seeing cuts. And yet we have the Israel lobby, a large portion of it, pushing to exempt Israel from having any cuts from the massive amount of American tax money that flows to Israel every year, over $8 million per day. Already far too much, most of us feel, for far too long, most of us feel. And yet there is a push. This is being noted in a number of publications in the Jewish press, the Forward, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency. A number of these have had articles about the fact that AIPAC, the major congressional lobbying arm of the Israel lobby, is pushing to exempt Israel from having these cuts. And what AIPAC pushes for, they usually get. They might not get this one because some members of the Israel lobby feel that that is so blatant, going so far, so counter to American interests, that probably the more sensible members of the Israel lobby are saying, don't do this, there will be a backlash. So only because the lobby is somewhat split, this exemption might not go through. That's the only reason, not because it's bad for Americans, not because it's unfair, not because it's illogical, not because it's immoral, only because some members of the Israel lobby may have the good sense to realize that this one might actually be too blatant and they might stop it. That's the kind of situation we're in.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because it seems like from the articles, and just for the benefit of listeners, let me give them the website here. It's councilforthenationalinterest.org. From the articles on your website, and of course the links that are connected to the articles in this particular article, it seems like in almost all of them that are related to this, they're talking about how, geez, maybe they're going overboard here and they're going to anger a lot of people, mainly your average American who really doesn't know the realities of the Israel lobby. They don't know the realities of what's happening over in Israel-Palestine because of this huge coverage that you point out so carefully and clearly. And also the fact that it seems like, it's kind of strange because I always compare trying to understand the Israel lobby and the quote-unquote special relationship that Israel has with the United States as being in a parallel universe, because it's something that you know about and I know about and a few other people know about. Most people aren't aware of it. But here, the Israel lobby and Israel's influence in the United States, they were poking fun at that. I think that was at the Oscars?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
What did you think when you saw that?
Well, I actually didn't see the Oscars. I think I was traveling and wasn't able to watch them. But I think I saw it afterwards on YouTube, and I saw some articles about... I'm trying to remember the exact statement. Can you remind me? It was pretty amazing.
Mark Wahlberg was on stage with some kind of a puppet, I think it was.
That's right.
The puppet basically was asking him if he was Jewish, and he said, no, I'm Catholic. And he was kind of making references to the power of Jews in Hollywood. And of course, the Jewish lobbies, anytime somebody says, well, Jews have an undue influence in Hollywood, oh, that's an anti-Semitic canard, all these reasons why that's not true, even though the numbers speak for themselves. You talk about statistical analysis. And again, there was another skit on Saturday Night Live, which didn't even air, which made quite a stink. Are you familiar with that one also?
I think I'm less familiar with that one. I did hear and read about the one that was on the Oscars, which is, it's interesting because in Hollywood, you know, at the Oscars and other types of places, it's an inside joke that the very large number of the people that are studio heads and the agents and the very powerful portion of Hollywood that really is very influential in Hollywood, it's an inside joke about how often that portion is Jewish. You know, so there are these kinds of jokes that are made in Hollywood. There was an article in the LA Times, I think it was several years ago, basically saying, yes, we dominate Hollywood. Yes, we control Hollywood. I don't remember the exact word. So what? In one sense, it's very open. I lived in Los Angeles for 2 years. It's very, very obvious, very open, really largely acknowledged. However, if someone else says that, or if it's said too publicly to the larger American public, then it's suddenly unacceptable to say. When Helen Thomas, formerly the senior White House correspondent, for many years a wonderful journalist, a very principled lady, when she said something like that, suddenly she gets attacked, and they destroy her career. They take away all of her lifetime awards, different scholarships that were named after Helen Thomas, really a very deserved awards that she had received for a lifetime of journalism. Suddenly, because she said something that was factual, that is an inside joke in Hollywood, this wasn't the original thing, but she had said this later on after the incident with her, then they confirmed how powerful they were, the ADL, Abe Foxman, by going around destroying her career even further than they had already done, taking away her awards, taking away the scholarships. So on the one hand, you know, if someone says that this pro-Israel group, that this Jewish Americans are very powerful in Hollywood, then instead of saying, well, that's not factual, here, let's talk about the content of that statement, is it true, is it not true, that's pretty much never done because it is so true. Certainly there are ways one could debate it or discuss it that would be valuable and reasonable, but that's not what's done. What's done is that whoever makes the mistake of saying such a thing will then be smashed very viciously and pervasively, which is, again, actually confirming the accuracy of what the person had said.
Right.
It's really, you know, truly ironic to see this happening again and again.
Right, and when will enough Americans begin to understand that and begin to have the courage to say, you know, this is ridiculous and, you know, you're not special. There's nothing special about you. In America, you can criticize anybody. And it brings me back to that saying. I don't know if you've heard of it. I don't even know who it's attributed to, but to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. Have you heard that before?
I have. There are a few different versions of it. That, you know, one is by Voltaire. Another kind of quote that was maybe by another person was that to learn the real power of a society, it's the entity that you whisper about. None of us whisper about Obama, about George Bush, about the CIA, about the FBI. I wouldn't whisper if I said any of those words, you know, in a cafe, in a quiet cafe. I wouldn't be afraid to talk about it.
Right.
And yet, if you talk about Israel, if you talk about Zionism, if you talk about Jewish Power, the name of a book by J.J. Goldberg, you know, an excellent, very informative book, I would be afraid to say the name of his book out loud because it would be so taboo to say such a thing. And the thing that's interesting is that I'm not Jewish, I'm assuming you're not. But some of the people, happily and ironically again, some of the people most outraged about this, who write about it very effectively, are themselves Jewish, who will point this out, who will point out how outrageous it is that we can and are able to talk about the power of other groups, say, give negative facts about other groups or other ethnicities. There's only one in which you're in such danger if you discuss them, and it is this particular group. And it's unhealthy. Too many people are being bullied by it and are timid. Even now, you know, you and I talking about this, I know this will be up on the internet. I'm already under many attacks, many websites and many individuals. I expect you are too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so here we are talking about a taboo subject, and I think it's very important that we do that. I think more people need to do this. We need a reasonable discussion about this. This is very central to the, quote, special relationship with Israel.
Yes.
It is used to silence discussion of Israel. It is very central to the ways that Israel is treated, unlike any other nation state, in which it gets far more American tax money over many years than other nations have gotten, in which Israel can violate and does violate U.S. laws, in which the Israel lobby appears often to violate U.S. laws and yet continues to get away with it. Because so much of what's important to be discussed is considered taboo, or only a few of us will do it. Many other people will maybe be nodding as they listen to this, or shocked by it, or maybe say, finally, somebody is saying it. But very, very few people will say it out loud, and that needs to change.
Yeah, I consider what you just said to be the most important part of reforming this issue. I always said that until this issue could be laughed at by people, nothing's going to change. People have to be able to look at this as a joke, not something to be afraid to mention out loud. They have to look at it as a complete joke and a farce, because it is a farce. When you look at it from the angle of what you just said, why should we have to hide discussions about Jews or Jewish power? We shouldn't. We should be able to say whatever we want, like you said, and like I said many times in the United States, we can criticize anybody. Heck, they talk online about assassinating the president. Nothing happens. Anybody says one thing, like, for example, that fella, what was his name? Rick Sanchez. He was on CNN or MSNBC or something like that. He said simply that he doesn't believe that Jews are an oppressed minority. That was it. He was done. He was gone. 2 seconds. Remember that?
I do remember that. And again, it's interesting because Sanchez, and I do believe it was CNN. I don't know if I've thought about this later, if this was just a coincidence or not. But he also was, I think, the only mainstream journalist who exposed the fact that the Gaza massacre that Israel perpetrated a few years ago, I think it was 2008, 2009, the mainstream media, including CNN, but everybody, the New York Times, Fox News, NBC, everybody was reporting it as Hamas had allegedly violated the ceasefire. Whereas Sanchez actually looked back and said, you know, we've all been reporting it that way. We looked back to it and we found out this was a mistake. Actually, Israel had violated the ceasefire first. You know, it was really an extraordinary statement on mainstream television. And then we have, many months later, Sanchez out. So I don't know if what he said about, I think it was about John Stewart, and sort of mentioning that a lot of people on TV and behind TV and involved with TV are Jewish, et cetera, making that kind of comment is what got him quickly thrown off TV. Maybe it was also, or maybe even more so, because they were looking for some reason to get rid of him, because he had given actually a very important factual report on who had actually created the violence in Gaza a number of years ago.
Right, and of course, then if he did do that, then he couldn't be trusted in the future to relay the truth to the viewers and listeners. That's interesting. I didn't know about that. And yeah, he had to go through the process of, you mentioned it before, that fella Abe Bachman, where he comes out and he says, well, he should apologize. And then whoever it is, the target apologizes. And then it's the same exact script. He comes back and he says, he didn't apologize enough. And the person
that's
then
right.
has
you
to.
You have to grovel.
Yeah, right. No,
well,
right.
What's quickly clear is that if anybody, you know, steps out of the straight and narrow, or to me, actually on the straight and narrow, those are actually what maybe they should do, they quickly have to apologize. And that's not enough. They have to grovel and grovel and grovel the way we saw Chuck Hagel do recently. And the thing with, again, with Rick Sanchez, and I'm not saying I'm a fan of his like you. You know, most of my TV viewing, when we do our studies of TV shows, we actually use the transcripts. That's how you can be really accurate. So, you know, I don't have a strong view about Rick Sanchez one way or the other, other than some of the disinformation that's very relevant. But I do think that, you know, as I recall, the statements were regarding John Stewart, who had made fun of Sanchez, and in, you know, maybe sort of a cruel way. I don't actually like cruel wit, which sometimes satire is.
Right.
And sometimes it can be funny, but it still can be somewhat mean if you're the recipient, and Sanchez was maybe too thin-skinned. I don't know, but, you know, people can be. You know, the little bit I know about John Stewart, I don't think, I would be surprised if he would really have found what Rick Sanchez said so horribly outrageous. I could almost see John Stewart doing a skit about it, sort of confirming that what Sanchez said was okay to say.
Right.
Maybe I'm giving him too much of a benefit of the doubt, and I've been critical of John Stewart on some occasions for some of what I felt were cover-ups in the past on Israel. But, you know, I sort of think he would think that, you know, statements about Jewish power, when they're fair, when they're actually within the reality of what's going on, should not be taboo. As you're saying, these things should be laughed about. you know, that these things should be put in the realm of normality, and there's something that a society grapples with, jokes about, kids one another about. It's much healthier than the way it is now, that if somebody tries to say something like that, or says it, or something slips out and they haven't phrased it correctly, you know, instead of being laughed off or maybe discussed reasonably, they're instantly attacked for it. And all that does is create resentment. It's resentment that smolders, that grows. More and more people start to be resentful, no doubt, about the misuse of that kind of power. And it makes things worse in the long run than the kind of safety valve about being allowed to talk about things in the same way that one talks about other subjects. And I do think that there are limits about the way and what someone should talk about. I don't like violence. I don't like any statement saying anybody should be killed or assassinated. The comments you made earlier that on the internet there are things about assassinating Obama, or, you know, on Facebook or on comments, there might be articles, very vitriolic comments about individuals that are supporting violence. I actually don't think that's okay. I don't like those. If it's a place where I moderate comments, which rarely is because usually I don't do that, but I would remove anything that's suggesting violence. But, you know, we're not talking about violence here. We're talking about normal speech. Normal speech that is designated abnormal in some particular cases.
Right.
And I think that's the problem.
Yeah, the First Amendment with an asterisk there.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can say anything you want, except you can't talk about Jewish power, can't talk about Israel, you can't tell the truth about Palestine. It's amazing. It's an amazing subject. People really, if they really want to understand how this all works, I think one of the first places to start is to go to If Americans Knew. That's ifamericansknew.org, right, Allison?
That's correct. A nonprofit organization that we're just trying to get the facts out.
I know that because I'm immersed in this stuff, but it would be great if more people got tuned into it. I think more people just have to have their First Amendment rights abridged. They have to find out what it's like to not be able to talk about just one topic in the United States. Everything else is cool except for that one. And Allison, the Council for the National Interest, that of course is councilforthenationalinterest.org. How is the council funded?
I'm glad you brought that up, because we're funded by donations. I sound like one of those PBS or NPR, you know, the donations by people like you.
Right.
But that really is what we need. If you go to the councilforthenationalinterest.org website, and if you click one of the tabs available to click on is the Israel Lobby, where we've started putting a list of the different entities in the Israel Lobby. It's not just AIPAC. It's probably 100, at least 100 there, different organizations that advocate on behalf of Israel, and all have large, large budgets. You know, a small budget is a few million dollars, far beyond anything we've ever gotten close to. And more typically, it's $20 million, or AIPAC itself has about, you know, it ranges from $40 to $60 million. There are others that have like $90 million. So just to be in that ballpark, we need donations. We get donations happily online. Both Council for the National Interest Foundation and If Americans Knew are nonprofit 501c3 organizations, which means that these are tax-deductible donations.
You do such a terrific job, Allison. Out of all of the people and groups out there, I love reading your stuff, and I love how you put things together and how you explain the facts. And it's just such a pleasure dealing with you, and such a pleasure speaking with you and having you on the program. And I want to thank you so much for the time you spent explaining all this to the listeners, Allison, and looking forward to speaking to you in the future.
Thanks very much for having me, and thanks for your show.